أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وبه نستعين، ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء. Brothers, sisters in Islam and Iman, Salamun alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, we're gathered here on this evening of the month of Ramadan. May Allah accept your fasts and all the ibadah that you are performing in this month. What I'd like to do tonight, inshallah, is to continue our topic of revolution of the self. Yesterday, in yesterday's talk, we spoke about this idea that sometimes in this society we're told to be somebody that we're not. And one part of that was this idea that we're supposed to be people who are self-reliant. We're supposed to take care of all of our problems ourselves, and we don't need others. And last night I talked about how in Islam we have an idea of being needy. It's something which is built into us. We can't escape it. We can try to stuff that need with different things like drugs and diversions to make us forget about that need. But at the end of the day, we're not going to find an answer. We're not going to be able to latch on to anything but Allah. And we ended with that verse of the Quran where Allah tells us, Ya أيها الناس أنتم الفقراء إلى الله. O people, you are all in need of Allah. There's a hadith that's narrated about Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein was somebody who's not only was his the way he died amazing, but the way he lived was amazing also. And one time they asked him, they said that, oh, Hussein ibn Ali, oh Imam Hussein, how is it that you woke up this morning? Meaning like, what's your situation? What condition are you in? فَقِيلَ لَهُ كَيْفَ أَصْبَحْتَ يَبْنَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. So he says, أَصْبَحْتُ, when I woke up, this was my situation. This was my psychological state, my spiritual state. He says, أَصْبَحْتُ وَلِيَ رَبِّي فَوْقِي. I woke up and I have awareness that I have a Lord who's watching over me. وَالنَّارُ أَمَامِي, and the hellfire is in front of me, meaning that it's potential that I could go to the hellfire. وَالْمَوْتُ يَطْلُبُنِي, and that my death is calling to me. وَالْحِسَابُ مُحْدِقٌ بِي, and the hisab, the reckoning is waiting for me. وَأَنَا مُرْتَحِنٌ بِعَمَلِي, and that which is going to be judged is my actions. لَا أَجِدُ مَا أُحِبُّ وَلَا أَدْفَعُ مَا أَكْرَهُ. I'm not in charge of the situation here. Meaning that I can't, whatever I want, I can't just bring about. And whatever I don't want, I can't just repel by myself. وَالْأُمُورُ بِيَدِ غَيْرِ. Everything is in the hands of somebody else. فَإِنْ شَاءَ عَذَّبَنِي وَإِنْ شَاءَ عَفَى عَنِّي. If he wishes, then he will punish me. And if he wishes, then he'll forgive me. فَأَيُّ فَقِيرٍ أَفْقَرُ مِنِّي. So who is there who is more of a faqir, who is more needy than I am? This line is truly amazing. Here's Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who is at the highest level of perfection. He has like all those things that we read about in comic books about different superheroes or different tales of like individuals who become, you know, great figures. The Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam were at the pinnacle of perfection. He had everything. But when he looks at himself and he sees that he's a human being after all, he has such a strong relationship with Allah, he realizes how much he's in need of Him. So he says, أَيُّ فَقِيرٍ فَأَفْقَرُ مِنِّي. Who is there who is more needy than I am? The lesson we get from that, one of the lessons we can get from that, is that it's okay to feel in need of someone who is Allah. And He can help us as well too. Now, what I want to talk about tonight, inshallah, is that how should we be as believers? Are we supposed to be people who are happy or people who are sad? Are we supposed to be depressed or are we supposed to be positive? Are we supposed to be negative or optimistic or pessimistic or what? And the impression when we read about a hadith like this, that Imam Hussein sees himself as somebody who is needy, sometimes we might think that, okay, that means that Imam Hussein is depressed. Na'udhu billah. But actually, when we look at it, Imam Hussein and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam were not people who were depressed people in their lives. So what I want to do first is talk about what the Ahlul Bayt were like. And then I want to talk about some strategies that we can take to avoid depression from the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. The Ahlul Bayt were people who, generally speaking, were seen to be very happy by others. There's a report from one of the companions. He says that when I would see the Messenger of Allah, I would see that he would always be joking around with other men, and he would try to make them happy by doing so. So among the believers, they had a very happy composure and a friendly behavior about them. Another individual who lived at the time of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says that whenever I would see Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, I would see that he would be somebody who would always be smiling, and he would frequently be joking around as well too. And we have stories about the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. I don't know if you've heard these before. They're quite interesting. At times they would joke around, and some of these jokes have been recorded. Like one time, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam was sitting with Imam Ali. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. And sometimes, obviously, the Prophet would be teaching Imam Ali, talking about very weighty things. But in this particular time, they were eating dates. And both of them had a pile of dates. Now, what the Prophet was doing is that he would take a date, he would eat the flesh of the date, and then when Imam Ali wasn't looking, he would put the stone in front of Imam Ali. So, as they started going through the pile of dates, Imam Ali's pile of date stones was increasing, and the Prophet didn't have any date stones in front of him. So, the Prophet makes a comment, according to this report. He says, Ya Ali, innaka la'akul. Oh, Imam Ali, you're one who seems to be eating a lot because you have so many date stones in front of you, and the Prophet doesn't have any. So look at how Imam Ali responds. Right? He says that, Ya Rasulullah, al-akulu man ya'akulu rutab wan nawah. The one who is, you know, a big eater is the one who eats the flesh of the date and the stone as well. You know, like, now we usually think of the Ahlul Bayt as being, you know, figures of like, you know, spirituality and on the prayer mat and, you know, fighting the enemies and stuff. And they had that. But they also had this to them as well too. In fact, when you go and look at their lives, brothers and sisters, we see that they enjoyed living. Every moment of life was precious to them. We always hear about the dunya being a place that we have to be careful about, the dunya being a trap, the dunya being like a snake. That's the dunya which is haram. And the Ahlul Bayt were far away from that part of the dunya. But when it came to living in this world, they knew how to live it in the most perfect way. And so they enjoyed the highest quality of life. They were not people who were depressed in that sense where they would just be walking around, you know, frowning and not able to be happy. No, they saw happiness, and as you can see, they would take advantage of the opportunities. One time, the Prophet was, he was with his companions, and he says, okay, you see my leg right here. which one of you, or where is the leg which is most like my leg? So the companions started, you know, measuring the Prophet's leg and looking at their legs and seeing, okay, whose leg is the closest in size and, you know, in length and width and breadth. And eventually the Prophet tells them that the leg which is most like my leg right here is my other leg right here. You know? So he's joking around. He has that part of him as well. Now, at the same time that they had this type of happiness in their lives, they wanted happiness for their followers as well. Like in one hadith, we're told from the Ahlul Bayt, they say, لا خير في الوطن إلا مع الأمن والسرور. They said that if you want to have a place to live, like you want to have your home, they say that a home has to have two components. One of them is that you have to feel safe in your home. The other one is that you have to have happiness in your home as well too. That's a prerequisite. Otherwise, it's not really a home. There's no goodness in any home that doesn't have safety, where people go there and they feel like, okay, I can be at peace here. I'm not at war. I'm feeling comfortable here. And also happiness as well too. That's one of the other components of a healthy household. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. They tell us that one of the responsibilities of believers is to cause other believers to be happy. One of the chapters of hadith that we have is a chapter on the importance of causing happiness to enter into the hearts of believers. So this is the type of lifestyle they had, the lifestyle they promoted. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't any room for sadness in their lives. No, they had times of sadness as well. For example, when they would stand for prayers, like in one report, we're told that when one of the wives of the Prophet, she says that when the prayer time came and the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was getting ready for prayer, it was as if he did not know us and we did not know him either, the way that he would change in his looks. And that wasn't just for him. Even the other imams, alayhim wassalam, we have reports saying that they would completely change when it came time for their prayer. And they would be sad as well when it came to the remembrance of the akhirah, when it came to the remembrance of Allah as well. Even we're told in the lives of the ulama as well, this one of the incident that keeps on coming to my mind, the Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi, when he would stand for the night prayer, he wouldn't just cry, but he would weep. And normally, like when we cry, it's enough for us to like just take a Kleenex or two, right? And that's enough for us to like, you know, take care of wiping our tears away. But they say that Imam Khomeini, he wouldn't just be able to use a handkerchief to take care of wiping his tears. He would need to use a towel to wipe away the tears that would be falling when he would stand in prayer. So you see, him being a student of the Ahlul Bayt, he's taking his cues from them. It wasn't the case that life was all laughter and happiness. No, there was that component to it that we talked about. But there was this component as well too. So how do we classify this? When is it that sadness is a good thing? And when is it something which is negative? Sadness is a good thing when it leads to true happiness. There are times when we have a need of being sad and a little bit grieved. And that's okay, because it helps us towards our goal. And we keep on repeating this night after night, that we have a goal in life, which is to get to Allah. So when that happiness can help us, then it's something which is good. That's why we're told in hadith from the Ahlul Bayt, they say, استجلب نور القلب بدوام الحزن. That if you want to make your heart enlightened, you want to lighten up your heart, we're talking about revolution of the soul. If you want to lighten up your heart, then do so by having constant grief. What is this constant grief? It's not the depression that everything is sad and we don't see happiness in anything. No. It's that amount of sadness over our situation, over our separation from what we long for, over our shortcomings, our wanting to do better, over our separation from the Imam of our time. These are things which can help us, and it's positive grief which moves us in the right direction. Now, what I'd like to do, inshallah, for the remainder of the speech is to mention a few tips that we have from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam to help us out of depressive states. Now, I don't mean to say that all depression can be cured by these tips. No, depression is a serious issue and it can reach different stages of severity. At times, as I said, it needs to be treated in a medical way. But as I also mentioned last night, there are solutions that we have within the teachings of Islam, within the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, that can help us to be happier in this world where there's so much sadness and so little happiness. I want to mention three ways, inshallah. One of the ways is the following, that, let me give you an introduction. Sometimes people are saddened because of a lack of understanding as to why things happen in a certain way. Something happens and it's not like the way we wanted to. Our parents, for example, are upset and you know they're always disagreeing with each other. And as a child, I find that very distressing. Something's going on in school and I'm having troubles with my friendships there. Or whatever other challenges that come up in our lives, so many difficulties that we face at different times. Sometimes we get into a trap and we start overthinking and overanalyzing the situation. Questions like, wait a minute, if there was a God, then why is this thing happening to me? Why is it that despite my trying to do my ibadah and worshiping Allah, I'm still facing these negative and bitter challenges in my life? Or sometimes it's of this nature that we start thinking and analyzing and thinking, oh, if only I had done this other thing right here, then things would have turned out a better way over here. And we start, you know, feeling really bad about our past actions and we're unable to get out of that trap. And sometimes that leads to depressive states. So one of the advices that we have from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam in this respect is that we should understand the concept of qada and qadr. One of the teachings that we have in Islam that we understand from the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam is this notion of qada and qadr. Let me briefly explain this. Qadr means to measure out and to apportion. And qada means to execute a decision. What we believe in is that in this universe, we're not completely independent creatures just left alone to fend for ourselves and do whatever we want. No, we believe that there is a system of causes and effects in this world that has been predetermined, the causes and effects. Like for example, if I take a match and I put it, you know, on something that's flammable and the other conditions are in place, there's enough oxygen there, it's not raining, for example, then that substance, like that piece of wood, is going to catch on fire. That's the way this world works. If I pour water on a dry carpet, the carpet is going to get wet. This is just the way that the world works. This has been predetermined. It's also been determined that we as human beings have a role to play in this world. We're given free will to make some decisions. Part of our destiny is formed by our own decisions. That's also part of the qadr of Allah. He's measured that out. He's put that system into place that we can control some things. But there's some things that you can control, some things that you can't control. You can't control, for example, when you breathe and when you don't breathe. To a certain extent, yeah, but after a certain point, the body takes over. We can only control our ability to stay awake, for example, for a certain amount of time. After a while, the body takes over. But there are some decisions that we make that are completely within our capability to make that decision. Now, there's another concept which is qada, which is ultimately the decision as to how things go in this universe is not in our hands. We can play a role in influencing that decision. But the final decision is the qada of Allah. He's the one who makes that decree and decides that things are going to be a certain way. So that's our belief. Now, does that mean that we believe in predestination? No. We believe that we have a role to play in that destiny. What takes place is partially due to our own decisions. But at the end of the day, it's Allah's will. Now, why does this become a very important concept in our practical daily lives? It comes into play when we want to interpret events that take place around us. Let's say that something bad happens. Like, let me take the example that I mentioned. Our parents are arguing and they're fighting a lot. And we've done our best as children, let's say, to help with the situation, you know, and to intervene, to help out, maybe get help from outside if possible. But that's just the way things are. Do I need to feel bad about that? Do I need to worry about it excessively? Do I need to eat myself up about it? Well, the question is, first of all, did I have anything to do with it? Is it my fault that it's happening that way? No. This is the way the universe works, that people make their decisions and consequences are there. If two people are exercising their free will in order to act in a certain way, then how can I influence that? I can only do things from the side. Sometimes we get so caught up with family issues that we eat up ourselves in the process. But as long as we're doing our responsibility, we're trying to advise when we can, we're praying for them, we're setting a good example, then there's only so much that we can do. People have to sort it out themselves at the end of the day. So we can't sacrifice ourselves because of other people's problems. Let's say I'm trying to get a job. I've been trying for a long time. I'm doing what it takes. Right? I'm working on my resume. I've been taking extra classes. I'm trying hard. I'm talking to the right people. But it still hasn't come up for me yet, that right job. Do I need to eat myself up about it? Do I need to get so worried and all my time has to be spent worrying about this particular thing? No. As long as I'm trying my best, then I should know that there's a greater hand which is above me. Look, the hadith from Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he's like, when I wake up in the morning, I sense that, he says, when I wake up, وَلِيَ رَبِّي فَوْقِي, there's a Lord who's above me. There's a Lord who's above us as well too. He's taking care of the situation. It's kind of like, imagine, let me just strike an example for you. Imagine that you get a chance to go on vacation and somebody tells you that, you know, you're going to go on vacation, I'm going to set you up. So, as you're getting ready to go, they hand you tickets and they give you the itinerary as well too. They're like, you don't have to worry about anything. You just go along with the flow and you follow these instructions that come up. Right, just go from this place to this place. When you see on that itinerary that you have to be at a certain place at a certain time, then you go there and do that. And along the way, we're going to take care of you. Everything is set up for you. Now, you're still exercising your free will to follow that itinerary. But along the way, you're seeing different sites, you're going through different things, and that vacation is set up for you. It's planned. When it comes to our situation in this universe, we're not alone. It's planned in the sense that the different factors are there. We didn't decide when to come here. We didn't decide what family to come into. These factors have been determined for us. We have some decisions we need to make, but depending on our decisions, then Allah will be setting up the future for us. So we're not independent, but nor is it the case that everything is predetermined for us either. Now, look at what the Ahlul Bayt tell us. They say that, this is from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, it's a report. He says, إِن كَانَ كُلُّ شَيْءٍ بِقَضَاءٍ مِّنَ اللَّهِ وَقَدْرِهِ فَالْحُزْنُ لِمَاذَا. He says that if everything in this universe is determined by the qada and the qadr of Allah, it's part of that system that God has put into place, then why is it that you're getting grieved? Why are you getting distressed? What is the point of that? Because after all, it's not random. Things aren't happening randomly in our lives. They're under the control of Allah. And number two, Allah operates on the basis of wisdom. Every decision He's going to make is the right decision. Everything that takes place is the right thing to take place. We don't have to second guess the situation. We have to trust in God that He's taking care of us. In another dua from, it's reported that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam said this dua, very beautiful. He says, كَيْفَ أَحَزَنُ وَأَنْتَ الْكَرِيمُ. How can I be sad and distressed when you are the one who is so generous and noble? وَكَيْفَ أَحْزَنُ وَقَدْ عَرَفْتُكَ. How can I be depressed and stressed and sad when I know you, I've come to know you, I have that relationship with you. I know that you're in charge of the universe. That's why one of the important steps that Islamic and Muslim counselors take when they're faced with people who are feeling depressed is that they remind them of the importance of understanding the qada and qadr of Allah. That Allah operates in this universe, He's very much part of our lives. We're not independent from that. Knowing that can tremendously help us. That, look, we're not alone here. Allah is fully aware of what's happening to us, and He's in charge of that as well too, and He operates on the basis of wisdom. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. One of the other reasons why people can get into depressive states is when they look around the world and they see so many problems, so much injustice, then they can start to feel a sense of meaninglessness. They feel like emptiness, that, you know, all this is going on, and who am I? What can I possibly do? What is all this for? Is life just about this? That the rich get richer and the poor get poorer and people are starving and here I am? And these types of thoughts. And that can lead to sadness, which can lead to grief and loss of hope and other things as well too. Now this is something that for us, as especially as followers of the Ahlul Bayt, as believers in the Imam of our time, it's something that we should be particularly immune from. Because we have a system of belief that should give us a lot of hope and a lot of happiness when we look forward to the coming of the Imam alayhi salam. In a hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam tells us, وَتَوَقَّعْ أَمْرَ صَاحِبِكْ لَيْلَكَ وَنَهَارَكْ. Night and day, we should be in a state of expecting the coming of our Imam. We have an Imam who's in charge, and we're anticipating His coming. And His coming is that which will bring with it justice and true happiness in the lands. Now, does that mean that we have to wait until the coming of the Imam before we can do anything about all the problems that are there in the world? No, that's not the right understanding of waiting for the faraj and the deliverance of the Imam. We have to be doing our best to establish justice, to work towards establishing good and spreading good. According to the words of one of the ulama, he put it very beautifully. He says that we have to be trying to build that house that the Imam alayhi salam will want to come and live in. Meaning that the society that we're striving to establish and to build. That should be our strategy. If I see that there's problems out there, rather than that making me feel depressed and feel empty, it should give me more energy that, hey, I need to do something here, the best that I can do to establish justice within my soul and then in my family and my community, to see what I can do to hasten the reappearance of the Imam of our time. So this is one of the other ideologies that should help us. On a daily basis, we should be connecting with the Imam of our time, spending some time remembering him and talking to him as well too. It's very important that as followers of the Imam, something should distinguish us from people who don't believe in the Imam of our time. If we're not remembering him on a daily basis, then after all, what does it mean to be a Shia? What does it mean to be a follower of the Imam of our time? One of the best ways of talking to him is the du'as that we've been given. For example, du'a al-ahd, which we're told to recite in the morning times, is a beautiful, beautiful du'a which teaches us why the Imam is important and how we should be praying for his reappearance. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Inshallah, with the help of Allah, we'll continue the discussion tomorrow night. Just to recap, we talked about the importance of understanding how the Ahlul Bayt were when it came to happiness and sadness. We showed how, on one hand, they were people who were happy and they put on a pleasant, they had a pleasant sense about them. They would joke with their friends. They wouldn't always be serious, although they had the serious side to them. But that didn't mean that there wasn't room for sadness, the type of sadness which was positive, that would help us in attaining our goal of getting close to Allah. And then we talked about some ways of avoiding the type of depressive states that we're seeing all too often in the society that we're living in. May Allah help us to grow closer to Him in this month of Ramadan. May He help us to gain a closer connection to the Qur'an and to the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. May He protect the deen of Islam. May He protect our families and guide us and all of them to good health, physical health and spiritual health. May He remove the bala, that whatever bala it is that we're facing. May He help all the youth to remain steadfast, and to those who are seeking to be married to find good spouses. And may He hasten the appearance of the Imam of our time. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.